broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Good evening. Welcome to our radio broadcast for this evening. This is a Wednesday night, I know, because the garbage is still sitting and stinking out there on the service porch, bud. Thanks very much. You missed it again.
Oh, forget about that.
Anyway, it's okay. Today's garbage day, folks, in our little business area. Anyway, welcome to the program. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-Phil. And after the show tonight, for those of you who are Backstage Pass members, we're having another Q&A. That'll be at 1 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time after the show on Phil TV in HD. One of the things we're going to be dealing with here this evening is this shooting spree in Texas. A man opening fire outside of a court in Texas. One person has been killed. We're going to be talking to Bob Bellwether from the Star Guard News Service, who arrived on scene just a few minutes after the shooting began. A reminder that we're online at philhendryshow.com. This is our website, so you can watch live streaming video of our show, and you can listen to live streaming audio of the show as you watch the video as well. You can get our podcast the next day. We have an archive of our KFI shows from Los Angeles, our Saturday night shows. Those are up. It's all there at philhendryshow.com with a Backstage Pass. So Bob Bellwether joining us here. If you can give us some background on what happened today, Bob. There are two stories I think I was looking at. I think there's one from BBC that may be just a tad arcane. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean, Phil. The BBC story was reported by a good friend of mine, Colin Brewster, who is writing for a European audience, but we write primarily for an American audience. He was, I think, when he wrote it, too, it was still unfolding, but I got there about a half an hour later.
After the shooting began?
After it began. But essentially, it was a man on trial for aggravated sexual assault. He opened fire, and his daughter was in critical condition. The mother was wounded. He was shot at by a couple of people, a couple of bystanders. No, he also shot at two bystanders, killing one woman. The incident started at 11:21. In the morning when he began shooting from a truck in front of the courthouse. His vehicle, according to police officers, was where the shots were originating from. Beaumont police returned fire. Now, I got to the situation and interviewed some of the principals, and according to the police, the, quote, hostages that he took refused to be victims. And that was according to...
That's Singletary?
Yeah. Beaumont Police Chief James Singletary at a press conference. They took the gun away from him. They unlocked the door.
Those were the hostages that were taken by this guy Granger.
Yeah, these were the hostages taken by this guy Granger that the police chief characterized as... I think one of the police officers characterized them as heroes, that they did disarm this man, and they did at some point open the door and let the SWAT team come in. And this is kind of a dicey way of reporting it, Phil.
Why do you say that?
What's that?
Why do you say that?
Well, I've always avoided using the term hero when you're talking about any aspect of a criminal incident, unless you're talking about a police officer, which I think probably applies. But when you talk about civilians, even if they're the hostages, I don't have an automatic switch that goes over to hero. So I have a very difficult time with that.
Well, is there something that you were seeing or reporting on, or was there something there, Bob, that led you to believe that they, quote, were not heroes? Who used the word hero?
Well, no one is. I don't know if there was the actual word hero was used. I heard, like I told you, the police chief, a guy by the name of Carol Riley, that's a woman, I should say, she said that they refused to be victims. This guy, Granger, there's no question, it's a good thing the police were able to arrest him. They disabled his vehicle. He ran about a block. He took hostages inside an establishment, but the hostages refused to be victims, said Police Chief James Singletary. That's who it was. It was the police chief.
Now, Carol Riley is a spokesperson for the Beaumont Police.
Okay. So she's the what they call the public information officer, the PIO, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So they took the gun away from him, and they unlocked the door for the SWAT team to enter.
So they were able to capture this guy. That doesn't make them heroes?
No, I don't think so. I'll tell you why. In my mind, it's not a word that should be used. I don't want to say it doesn't make them heroes. But when you use the word hero, even if it has something to do with a man saving the life of a baby, like we reported on here last month in Washington State, where I think it was a man that reached out and literally caught a baby in midair as the child had been thrown out a window by someone, and the baby was caught and the baby's life was saved by the act of catching it. I reported on that, but I'm not going to use the word hero.
And why would you not use that word? Isn't it an applicable word?
It's really not. And the reason that I don't think it's applicable is it doesn't include the guy who it leaves out, Phil, the guy who's reading the story. You and I, and the heroic things that we do every day. I can't speak for you, I can't speak for anyone, but when I read a story written by one of my colleagues that talks of a hero doing this or a hero doing that, I feel cheated and unfairly dealt with. So I don't write about that. And I said to the editor...
That's an interesting point of view. I want to stop you. Our number, 877-876-7445. We're talking with Bob Bellwether from the Star Guard News Service, who is covering this incident today in Texas involving a man who shot and critically injured his own daughter, shot and critically injured his own wife, shot and killed at least one other bystander, if not two, and was eventually apprehended by some patrons in an establishment of some kind where he had sought to take hostages. They took the gun away from him. They disarmed this man and allowed SWAT members access to the building to eventually apprehend him. They have been described, at least in one story that I saw here, Bob, as heroes. In this instance, a story that I'm, right here, Texas courthouse shooting hostages turn heroes, quote, end quote. And in another instance, the police chief, as I mentioned, said they refused to be victims. Bob Bellwether saying that you're not going to report on them as heroes, huh?
I don't know. No, I don't do that. And the reason why I don't do that is it is not my job to write a story and then have people that read my story every day go into the day with that much less to feel good about. If you talk about another group of people or citizens somewhere else who are heroes, then that gives the man reading that story one more sort of nail in the coffin of his day, because he's not a hero. And there's very little likelihood that he is. I subscribe to the belief that...
Well, let me ask you something. When we...
Well, Phil, I subscribe to the belief that either we're all heroes or none of us are.
When would you use the word hero, then, in writing a story?
Well, I think you use the word hero when you're talking about soldiers in a faraway war. You may use the word hero when you're talking about police officers. I wouldn't use the word necessarily when we're talking about firefighters, because firefighters don't carry weapons.
And well, what does that have to do with it if a firefighter... I want to get your reasoning here. When a man was last month in Washington State, you say a man caught a baby that had been thrown from a window. Who threw this baby?
Well, it was a distraught mother. The wife of this man was distraught. She had been suffering from depression. She was obviously in need of institutionalizing. The police had arrived, but not in time. And it was the husband who was able to literally snatch this child from the air.
Before the police arrived?
What?
Before the police arrived?
Yeah, before the police arrived. And my colleague at Stargard, a guy that I've worked with for a long time, Mitch Beline, called him a hero in his article. And I said, when is it going to end? He said, well, don't. And he's asking the question you asked, which is, don't you believe he's a hero? I said, no, he's not a hero. If he's a hero, what about me? What about you? So, no, I don't call him that.
All right, Bob Bellwether on the line with us. Hang on, Bob. Good talking to you. Haven't talked to you in a long time.
Yeah, it's great to be on the phone with you. I'm sorry I'm late calling in tonight.
No, that's all right. I know it's a busy day, a big news day. Bob Bellwether, as we talk about this shooting in Texas and other incidents involving heroic or extraordinary action by civilian citizens, the people that would have been hostages today instead disarmed this Granger and were able to turn him over to the police. But Bob is not calling them heroes. He doesn't like using the word hero. We're going to get into this manner of reporting. And, of course, take phone calls from you, too, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
What?
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line here is Bob Bellwether talking about this shooting in Texas and other high-profile incidents having to do with the public being at the wrong place at the wrong time. And really what happens when individuals take on take extraordinary action. Today in Texas, we had these people who might have been hostages disarming this gunman. You were talking about a man who had saved a baby. You don't call any of them heroes.
Well, no, I don't call them heroes, Phil. And here's the reason. I have my reasons for this, and they're very specific. I don't think that calling the average man a hero does anything for your reader. I think all you do is when you call another man a hero, especially a man who is an average man, might be an individual that has no ties to law enforcement or rescue operation or any first responder kind of a job, but he finds himself in a situation where he might have saved a life. Well, I wouldn't call him a hero necessarily because he wasn't looking to do that day. He was forced into it. Most people that save lives that way are forced into it. They don't really choose it.
Well, there's an interesting comment.
What'd you say?
That's an interesting comment.
Why do you say that?
Well, what do you mean most people that are heroes? What about, all right, you said that you would call police officers heroes.
Oh, I would call a police officer a hero. I would call soldiers heroes.
You said you would not call firefighters heroes.
No, I wouldn't.
Why not?
Well, I don't think of firefighters technically are heroes because they don't carry any weapon. Their job is to go and climb a ladder and save a person from a burning building. It's what they're hired to do. And so... You don't really call a guy a hero when he goes off and he does his job for the day.
Wouldn't you say that about police or about soldiers?
No, I would say that they're heroes because by carrying a gun, then you are admitting that you run the risk of losing your life. And so that's a hero. If you're a civilian, like these people today in Texas, they didn't get out of bed this morning looking to disarm a hostage, a gunman, and make themselves into heroes, but that's what they became. And so, in the minds of some, and so I don't call that a hero. The man who caught the baby, he didn't look to, he wasn't getting out of bed to catch a baby.
So in other words, anybody who is in the extraordinary position of saving a life or doing something along those lines, who ordinarily doesn't do that for a living, you would not call a hero because of why? Again, they were forced into it?
Yeah, they were forced into it. In a unusual turn, a corkscrew, if you will, or a pig's tail of circumstance that they would not find themselves involved in. And I think that as a writer, as a good journalist, I've always felt that you've got to be truthful. So I can't call a man a hero if he had no choice but to stick his hands out that window and catch that baby, or else he would have been viewed as the lowest thing on earth for the rest of his life.
All right, we're talking with Bob Bellwether on the definition of a hero in the various news stories that he's covered in his career, specifically this news story today that Bob was very much up front and personal to, and that is this gunman at a Texas courthouse in Beaumont today. Watching things unfold, and especially his apprehension by the SWAT team with the assistance of civilians or citizens who had been almost taken as hostages. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-Phil. Let's go to Bob in Buena Park, California. Bob, hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil. Listen, the gentleman that is talking, forgive me, I don't know if you're a... I thought I heard Phil say you're a newspaper writer.
Yeah, I'm a journalist.
All right. Do you work for the local paper in Houston?
No, I'm work for. I'm a syndicated writer.
I'm sorry.
He's in a lot of different newspapers.
All right. I heard you say that you don't believe these people are heroes, and you don't believe that a man that caught a baby that had been thrown from a window by a woman, you don't think he's a hero?
No, I don't. I'll tell you why.
But can I interrupt you because I don't have a lot of time?
Go ahead.
You said that the guy's wife threw that baby and he caught it. There are very few opportunities I think a man gets in life to be able to look at the woman that he married and say, here's something you did that I had to turn around, otherwise it was going to be a disaster, because most women who do bad things are able to blame the man.
Well, I don't know. You're getting into an area that I just...
Well, that was the case in my marriage, because my wife made it always about me and bad stuff that I did. So this man caught this baby and was able to say, I caught the baby you threw out the window.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Why would you not call him a hero?
Because he's not a hero, because he didn't expect that.
No, but what do you mean he didn't? I don't understand what he means by you. What do you mean by that?
Because if that man did not catch that baby, well, then the wife would be able to say, now you really are all those bad things I've thought that you've been, you see?
Well, all right, so...
In other words, what you're saying, Bob, if I can... You're saying that, well, I've got two Bobs on the line here. You're saying that if the man doesn't catch the baby, then the wife still wins. She can say, here's one more bad thing.
Yeah, and that's what this gentleman's referring to. If that man caught that baby and he looks at her and he says, this is proof that you're a murderer and I caught this baby, and I don't call him a hero, you say he doesn't get credit.
No, I don't think he does get credit, because the wife can say, big deal, nobody's calling you a hero, and so what?
Yeah, well, that's not my job. You know, just because they have a dispute in their marriage, and he doesn't get credit for a lot of things, she blames him for other things, not my job to figure that out by calling him a hero.
Yeah, I was going to say, this has got nothing to do with the relations between a husband and wife who are not getting along because she's always blaming him for stuff. This is far more serious, you know?
Yeah, but I would want to be credited with catching that baby and saving a baby's life so I don't have to listen to her.
Yeah, well, that's something I think you got to work out
All right, hold on, gentlemen. Hold on. We'll be right back. I got to take a break. 877-876-7445 is our number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Bob Bellwether. Who are the heroes? Well, they can be police officers and soldiers. They cannot be firefighters or civilians because that simply makes the rest of us feel as if we're not heroes. So he doesn't describe them as heroes. We're talking about the shooting in Texas. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL here, and Bob Bellwether on us on top of us on the line here. We're talking about what happened in Beaumont, Texas, and this almost hostage-taking, which didn't occur, but they're not heroes. And
they're not heroes, and I wrote about that because the word is overused, that's all. The word is overused.
What about firefighters again? They don't...
Firefighters are brave men, but they're not heroes. They don't use guns. The same would be said of the average civilian. They don't use guns. And that's what I've been writing about. The biggest problem with writing about heroes is when you write about a hero, the person that is reading that is suddenly saying to himself, well, I'm not a hero. This is a hero. Right? And
so this is more about how it's received.
Exactly. How it is received and whether it's fair to call everybody and their mother a hero when the guy reading it feels a little bit left out.
All right, 877-876-7449. Here is DeVar. Go ahead, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
You know, I truly feel that this, you know, with all due respect to your guest, to call a person that saves a life, a child is thrown out the window and he saves a life, I don't have any problem calling that man a hero. In fact, when I hear that, and I read
right, but he didn't
that,
plan on it. He didn't. He wasn't. He didn't get up in the morning to do it.
In fact, I believe it's even greater that a person does not wake up planning on doing that, but yet they take the step to heroically save a life. That's an amazing thing, and I in fact feel inspired when I read something such as that. There is so much negativity in our media today that when I have an opportunity to read about a hero who saved a life, it inspires me to be a better individual and to be a better citizen.
Let me ask a question here, DeVar. Let me ask Bob a question. Why? Give me this again, which seems to be the crux of your comment, that the guy didn't get out of bed in the morning looking to be a hero.
Well, I'll tell you why. And I think with the man, first of all, I agree with your caller. I love to read of greatness. I love to read of greatness, but I always have to temper it, and I never really feel 100%, I suppose, inspired, because I know that if that man hadn't done what he did, people would see him as a gutless worm. You know, think about it. If the lady had thrown the baby out of a window and he didn't reach out to grab the baby, he would have been a gutless worm. All right? And so I don't call that a hero. I call it an act of self-defense. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I believe that the in this situation, the opposite of gutless hero, or of a gutless individual, would be a hero. And, in fact, he saved – see, you're missing the point. He saved a life. He saved a life through an
He had no choice. He had no choice.
Sure he had a choice. He has his free will and choice. Don't think that he couldn't have not made that decision. Think about these individuals that have heard of the hostage taking. They could have sat there and done nothing, yet they put their life on the line, and they could have lost their life. They put their life on the line. They had a choice, and they made that choice.
Well,
any individuals out there would not have made that choice.
You're interrupting my caller, Bob.
I apologize, sir. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
What did you want to say?
Well, I don't think either one of you guys are seeing the big picture. And the big picture is, if those hostages or potential hostages had not done what they'd done, well, they would have been gunned down like animals in a slaughterhouse. So I don't think they had a choice. You see what I'm saying?
No, I don't see what you're saying. Why not sit quietly and be a hostage?
That same reason why you can't sit quiet and be a hostage on an airliner anymore, and they're going to fly it into a building. You see? So,
I see them as heroes. I see them as being heroes. In fact, I see a firefighter that saves a life as being a hero. I don't think they're heroes.
They're not heroes.
Carrying a gun. I don't think it makes much sense.
I think that a firefighter's got to definitely be a hero. Hey, DeVort, thank you very much, sir, for your call. 877-876-7445. 877-876-7445. This is kind of a weird definition of what a hero is, you know.
Well, I don't think it is a weird definition. I'm a little amazed at your own opinion, Phil, and your callers, because here, look, if I took a shotgun or a handgun or I threaten your life, and I said, if you don't go out there and save that man's life from being run down by a bus, I'm going to kill you and your entire family. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and save a life. Do I call you a hero? Well, I guess, but I threaten to kill you and your entire family if you didn't go out and do it. So I don't think that's being a hero so much as I think you were just being sensible and doing as you were told so that you wouldn't get gunned down.
All right, these are ridiculous. I think it's kind of a ridiculous comparison. What about the firefighter?
Well, the firefighter's the same. If he doesn't climb the ladder and go into a burning building and get a baby or a cat or a dude, you think he's a hero when he got a cat? I don't know. I've heard firefighters called heroes when they went and got a cat out, or a dog, or something along these lines. Huh? So, I think...
Well, what are you saying, that firefighters are simply doing their job?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yes.
All right, and that means they're not heroes?
Not in the strict sense that a soldier or a police officer is, because they have guns. And guns mean a whole elevated situation.
877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk about heroes, specifically this situation in Beaumont. Charlie, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, Phil. I enjoy your program. I called the other night.
All right. Well, we don't really take more than, you know, one call every couple of weeks.
Well, this man is talking about what a hero is. I have a brother who died in a warehouse fire in New Hampshire. He was a member of the Bangor Fire Brigade, and one of five firefighters who died in a warehouse fire. Are you saying that my brother was not a hero? I'd like to hear this gentleman say my brother was not a hero.
I don't know the situation, your brother.
Was he
trying to save a life?
Well, if I told you he was saving a life, you'd say he wasn't a hero because that's what he gets paid for.
Was he saving a life?
No, he was not. He was inside trying to put a fire out.
Well, I hardly think he's a hero because he's trying to put out a warehouse fire. Is he?
Yeah. See, I knew you'd say that.
Well, why would you call in then and invite the depression that I was about to...
You see, I don't think you have any respect. And you're a journalist. You're a journalist, right?
I didn't hear what he said, Bill.
Yes, he's a journalist.
You're a journalist. And my brother died as a firefighter.
Well, he was in an empty warehouse trying to put a warehouse fire out. Is that right?
That is right, yes.
I just don't see it. I think he was doing... Did they put the fire out?
The fire actually was not put out. It eventually spread to two other establishments before it was under control.
Well, so he didn't even really do his job either.
Why would you say that about a man who died?
Phil, you asked me.
You're talking about my brother, who didn't do his job, isn't a hero, and is dead.
Sir, every day people are dying. I don't know whether that makes them heroes.
You are what's wrong with the liberal media. You are what's wrong with the liberal media.
I don't know what I'm saying. It's not the liberal media. I'm just saying...
You're saying that because his brother wasn't saving a life and because the warehouse fire that he was fighting spread to two other establishments, he's not a hero.
Not only that, but he didn't even do his job right because the fire spreading to another establishment.
Well, I think that's pretty cold-hearted, sir.
I'm sorry, but I'm a journalist, and my job is to really report the facts as I see them, and not to, I guess what you would call it, not to color it.
All right, well, the gentleman gone? He's gone. 877-876-7445. We're talking here with Bob Bellwether from, Stargard News Syndicate. It's almost like the attitude that these guys are not heroes because they're not given their lives and because they didn't stop the fire, because they just basically didn't do what a cop does or a soldier does. Not being a hero has a very high definition for you, and you're willing to, in that instance, insult that man.
Well, I didn't mean to insult him, but I think there's some people that put themselves in the pathway of being insulted by demanding a certain recognition that is not theirs. I'm trying to help the average guy reading a newspaper so that he doesn't feel put down or put upon, and people don't look at him like he's he doesn't mean anything, because everybody else is a hero, and suddenly the term hero you apply to everybody. And that, I think, is what I call that cheap. Real cheap.
Back here in just a couple of minutes on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Henry Show. And on the line with me here is Bob Bellwether, as we're discussing with him the events in Beaumont, Texas, the people taking hostages. Brad, the one guy attempting to take a hostage, and the people overpowering him, and they're not heroes. Here is Brad in Las Vegas. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I called up earlier and I said I was a firefighter in Miami. And you hung up on me. And
I asked you if you were a fire. I asked you what fire department you worked for.
And I said I worked for Miami Springs.
And I said, what county was that in?
And I
said, what county is that in?
Hold on, Phil. Can I interrupt here for a... No, I'm talking. You asked me what county Miami Springs is in.
Yeah, what county is Miami Springs in?
And I said Miami Springs County.
There's no such county as Miami Springs.
I wanted to I still want to say something. The guy that came...
877-876-PHIL, how can you come on here and say you worked for Miami Springs Fire Department in the county of Miami Springs?
Well, I want to say something. I think what that man was saying, and I think it's true of a lot of the people that you'll talk to after you write an article saying no one's a hero... people are not really heroes. This is an example of what I'm saying. How could people be heroes when they don't even know what county they live in? You know.
Well, no, that's not... You don't have to be a brain surgeon. At least I don't think you have to be a brain surgeon. I could be wrong. But you do have to, in order to be... at least to be conversant with some of these things, you got to know what you're talking about. So let's get back to what you think is a hero.
What do you mean you got to know what you're talking about?
You got to know what county you live in, don't you? You say that you work for a fire department, and it's in a certain county, and you say the county is Miami Springs, and there's no such county.
All right. Well, I understand what you're saying, but that's what I mean. I'm trying to protect people like that by not writing about heroes. You've got a lot of dumb people. There's no question, Phil. All right. You've made your point. But what good am I going to do anybody when I write about heroes, and I say a firefighter's a hero, a police officer's a hero, and everyone's a hero, except the poor, stupid bastard that is reading the newspaper. You see what I mean?
Right.
Well, how does he feel?
Well, I guess he's just going to have to go back to kindergarten and pass clay or something. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if there are people out there that are extraordinary and there are people out there that are not extraordinary, I don't know what to do. 877-876-PHIL. David G. Hall. Is that David online?
Right four.
David, how's it going?
Yeah, it's not going too good. Why don't you wrap this up?
You want me to wrap this up, huh?
Yeah, wrap it up. I'm getting tired of listening to this guy. And who am I speaking with?
Don't worry. You don't need to know who you're speaking with. Why don't you wrap it up?
Ray, let me ask you something.
No, you can ask me all kinds. Why don't you wrap it up?
What do you want? Why should I wrap this up?
Because it's tiresome. I'm listening to this guy talking about what a hero is, and he says everybody is the only guys that are heroes are cops and soldiers. So the rest of us are stupid, and the rest of us don't rate the label of hero, and so nobody's a hero, and all you're doing is putting me down. And
well, only you, huh?
I don't know how the rest of the audience feels, but it's depressing me. Okay? Can I say something here? Yeah, I've been listening to you for an hour. What do you want, sir?
Well, a thing that I want to say is, and your name's David Hall, right?
Yes.
All right. If you feel like you're a horse's ass, then that's how you feel. That's why I don't want to call anybody a hero, because I don't want to make you feel bad.
I already feel bad listening to you talking about what you think a hero is. Because there's one thing for sure, I don't qualify for any of that.
Well, if that's the case.
So if this is just depressing you, David, you want me to get off this subject?
Yes, if you don't mind. If you don't mind, get off the subject, because I find it depressing for me, and I'm sure that there are other people out there who find it depressing. I bet you I could get a lot of people to call and say it's depressing because they are not heroes.
All right, well, I'm not going to do that.
Bill, if Mr. Hall feels that I am singling him out, and I don't want to do that, he has every right in the world to complain about that, but he still doesn't get the fact that I'm trying to protect him.
You're not protecting me from anything, telling me that I don't do anything heroic. All I do is try to protect myself.
Have you ever done anything heroic in your life, David?
No. No, not according to me, just in your life.
No, I haven't.
You've never saved any life?
No, I've never done a thing. And according to this guy, I never will do a thing.
Well, I'm sorry if that's depressing to you.
It's just the way it is, but I'd like Bill to wrap it up and quit talking to you because you bother me. You understand? You bother me.
All right, well.
You're wrapping it up?
Yeah, okay. Bob, thank you.
All right, Phil, I'm sorry. Just
wrap it up if you don't mind.
Goodbye, and thanks very much for being on the show tonight. I appreciate it. Bob Bellwether with us, and David Hall, I think, is still... Are you still on the line there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You know, if you don't want me to do certain topics...
Bill, I told you, you could do any topic that you want to do, as long as it isn't something that depresses me or makes me feel like I'm being targeted. Now, I have asked you in the past...
Yeah, I know, and to me, that is a directive that I cannot... First of all, I can't follow because it's too confusing.
Why is it confusing?
What do you mean I can't do any topics that may be depressing to you?
Well, I mean, you got a guy on here today saying that the only heroes are cops and soldiers. Well, that eliminates me.
Oh, I see. So anything that makes you, it could be anything, huh? What about the guy that caught that baby? Does that eliminate you because you never caught a baby?
So I guess that means you think I'm crazy, huh?
It's getting there, yeah.
Well, I got news for you, friend. I'm not crazy. I'm just overworked. And yes, I would resent very much if you were talking about some guy that caught a baby, because I've never caught a baby.
What are we...
Hello?
Hold on, what?
The guy came and said that they could arrange it.
Put him back on, Bob.
I was going to just say to you, I'm sorry to come back on here, and I'll get right off, Mr. Hall, but we could arrange it to throw a baby out of a window and have...
Cut him off, will you, please?
Is that your idea, some kind of a joke?
No, it's not my idea of a joke, that guy. Bud...
I didn't know what he was going to do!
The hell you didn't! Phil, I'm just trying to explain to you that we're in very, very difficult economic times, very tough, tough times for a lot of people. When you come on the air and start talking about how even lower I am on the evolutionary scale, how even lower I am on the development of man, that I'm not even ever in my life going to approach the level of hero.
Yeah, I know, David, but I've rarely ever had a program director come on here and say...
Well, you know what? I'm not a regular program director.
Come on here and say, don't do that topic because it affects me.
Oh, the hell you have it. You know full well that one of the reasons why topics are picked in talk radio is, number one, they'll make the program director feel good. And this topic tonight makes me feel lower than whale crap. So I would, I would respectfully request that you run these topics by me.
I tried to tell you about it, Mr. Hall, you didn't want.
But so you're trying to say to me...
Wait, hold on for a minute. You did what?
I tried to tell him you're going to do a thing about Hero.
Why didn't you tell me?
You were in a meeting.
Then keep knocking on the...
Wait a second. Are you reporting to him everything that I'm doing on the show?
Yeah. I mean, excuse me, yeah? I asked him to.
Well, that's going to end. You understand? That's ending. I'm not going to have you reporting to him everything that I do on the show because it's none of his business. He doesn't need to know.
Nice going.
Well, I didn't know he's going to be...
I don't want you, you know, I don't want you giving the thumbs up or the thumbs down on bits that we do. Do you understand? Do you understand?
Yes.
Phil Hendry Show, I suddenly got some kind of a frog in my throat, or maybe it's a toad, or maybe it's a reptile of some kind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Big mouth.
I do it.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. This hour, we are going to have our listener line. It's where we put a average listener, one of our Phil Hendry Show listeners, on our newsmaker line to find out what they have been up against in their lives, what it is that they're campaigning for, what issues are of interest to them. Lloyd Bonafide is a Korean War veteran from Alhambra, California, I should say. And he's joining us this hour to talk about a issue he's been involved with for the last 5 years, ever since the death of a dear friend in an automobile accident out on Interstate 10 out near Palm Desert, and that is the keeping of speed limits at or below 65 miles an hour in the United States, if not lower. Lloyd, good evening, sir.
Yes, sir.
And, sir, it was your friend Wally or Wallace who was killed near Palm Springs?
Mr. Hendry, this was Wallace Beerford, who'd been a friend of myself and my wife. He and his wife were friends of my wife Marjorie and myself since we had moved here to Alhambra in the late 1950s. And I started a heating and plumbing business right after I got out of the service. He was in the electrical business here. He was a very good friend. And one evening, they were traveling to the Phoenix, Arizona area. They were somewhere outside of, in the Palm Springs it was Interstate 10 near the 111.
Yes, sir.
And there was a drunk driver that traveled across the median there. It was, in those days, a simple dirt median or a sandy median that hit them head on. And since that time...
Very sorry to hear that, sir.
Well, I thank you very much. But since that time, my wife and I have both been out front of keeping the speed limits in the United States. Not just in the state of California, but in the United States at or below the current levels.
Now, what is the fastest posted speed limit in America?
The fastest posted limit in the United States is in the state of Montana, 80 miles an hour.
That's on a U.S. interstate.
On a U.S. interstate, and a very open road, not an excessive amount of traffic, a good deal of truck traffic, and you'll find on that particular stretch of interstate a great many vehicles traveling cross country or attempting to travel cross country. Obviously, taking advantage of the high rate of speed. It's our opinion that those limits are out of bounds and should be lowered to within a reasonable limit, we think, of 65 or 70 miles an hour.
Now, here in California, in the desert, in that very area where your friend was killed, I know is the 75-mile-an-hour limit.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
And in many of the, as you say, these open spaces, whether it is open desert or open green space in the United States, in some areas where there is not a very big concentration of automobiles or people, the interstate speeds are going to be posted at a higher speed. Are you now saying that those 75-mile-an-hour speed limits as well get lowered?
Yes, sir. We feel that those limits, the 75-mile-an-hour limit and the 80-mile-an-hour limit, all of those limits need to come down to a uniform 65 miles per hour outside of the metropolitan and urban areas, 55 miles an hour inside the urban areas. Now, you have just have the example, as I told you, of these automobile accidents that take place on the open interstate, whether it's in places where the limit is posted at 70 or 65, for instance, on Interstate 5 that travels up through the San Joaquin Valley in California, any number of fatalities caused by a high excessive rate of speed by automobiles traveling at 70, 75 miles an hour.
What is the speed limit there?
The
speed limit on the 5 through the San Joaquin Valley. We're talking about a stretch of freeway, folks, between Los Angeles and the Bay Area of San Francisco. That is very well traveled by people going between the two cities.
Yes, that's 70, 75 miles an hour in some places.
So it's pretty fast.
Absolutely. We think it is excessive. We would like to have it lowered and have it lowered to the levels that I have just spoken of.
All right, we're talking with Lloyd Bonafide here about lowering the speed limit across the board in the United States back down to 65-55. 877-876-7445. Now, I'm going to hit you with the one that everybody has probably already hit you with, and that is the argument that in Europe, they don't have posted limits in some places.
Everybody likes to talk about the Autobahn.
All right, well, hold on, because we'll get to the Autobahn and a lot of these. But in Europe, in some countries, there are no posted limits. There is, in fact, a case to be made that those countries and the drivers in those countries are as safe, if not safer or better drivers, I should say, than we are in the United States.
Well, I will tell you this. There probably is a case to be made for that. I'm not interested in what they're doing in Europe or in Asia or anywhere else. And I don't think anybody in the United States should be interested. That's none of our concern, what they're doing over there. If they're able to, if they want to post speeds or not post speeds of the speed limit, they probably have handled it better than we have.
What is your major argument against, if I say to you, well, look at the speeds that they have in Europe, why can't we have the same thing here?
For the very simple reason is we don't have the same quality of driver as they have in Europe. I'll give you the reason for that. You were speaking of motorsports not too long ago on your program, Mr. Henry. The motorsports, the race car driving that they do in Europe is a road race type of racing. They're used to dealing with these kinds of road race conditions, and so it's a form of a challenge and something they teach their drivers. I don't know. I'm only speculating.
But you're saying they're better drivers.
I think on average in Europe, yes, they're better drivers. I'd like to believe that Americans someday will be as good, but we obviously do not handle high rates of speed the way they can in Europe. And as the result, you have you mentioned the Autobahn. Let's talk about the Autobahn. It's a well-maintained stretch of highway. Not everyone is traveling at 100 miles an hour. Some people are obviously much slower. They know how to deal with each other on those roads, where they slow traffic and so forth. In the United States, we don't seem to have the ability to put two and two together when it comes to that kind of thing. And so I
don't want to talk about that.
And well, you say you don't want to talk about it, but it's an obvious part of the discussion. When you say you want to lower the speed limit of the United States, you have to talk about, gee, I wonder why it is that we have to lower the speed limit. I remember when the speed limit was lowered originally. I was in high school. It was lowered to 55 miles an hour. Yeah, 55, and that was to conserve fuel.
Right there, bingo. You're right there. Hold, that's exactly correct. The speed limit was lowered to conserve fuel, and we realize now that that was a good thing. In Europe, if they want to spend $5 a gallon or $10 a gallon, let them.
But I still say you have to bring into the conversation the fact that in Europe they're able to handle those high speeds, and they have a rate of fatalities at or lower than our own.
Again, you are bringing up Europe, and I just don't want to talk about Europe. It's none of my business. It's none of your business. And I don't think the American people are ready to discuss Europe until such time as we are in the same, if you want to call it, in the same ballpark when it comes to driving an automobile.
All right. 877-876-7445. Should we lower speed limits in the United States even more than they have been lowered? We just have not mastered the rate, or the art of traveling at a high rate of speed as they have in Europe. 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be back right after this.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
No, I don't care to talk about it.
Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Lloyd Bonafide joining us, a Korean War veteran. He's been involved in the issue of speed limits. You know, last night, Mr. Bonafide, we were talking about different rules and regulations regarding truck drivers and the Interstate Commerce Commission. Is this something that you deal with by way of the Interstate Commerce people?
No, it's a different department of the Department of the Interior and the Department of Commerce, but mostly Department of the Interior. And of course, this is also something you have to deal with on the state level. But the more than anything else, my daughter and the man that she married returned from Europe, where they had been stationed in Germany. This man, my daughter married, was a member of the United States Army, and said to me, boy, this Autobahn is really great. And that's all I needed to hear, because he is a manifestly irresponsible man. And all I needed to hear from this man, who is noted, he is noted in our family as a blabbermouth and a big mouth, and he shoots his mouth off. And I said there and then, and I swore an oath, I would never countenance the raising of a speed limit in America. More to the point, I would never, ever want to see the United States turn into another Germany where you've got an Autobahn.
Well, all right, okay, so this is a problem you got with a son-in-law.
No, it's not a problem I've got with a son-in-law. It's a problem I have with a big, the blabbermouth who talked and talked and talked, sir.
All right, 877-876-7445. Now I'm going to go over to I got two Williams on the line here. We'll go to my truck driver, William. Go ahead, sir, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I'm talking about these speed limits here.
Yes, sir.
Talking about the Autobahn? If people over 80.
Yeah, this is Lloyd Bonafide, sir. What is your name, sir? Yes,
William.
Sir? Yes, sir. This is Lloyd Bonafide.
Yes, sir.
All right. And I was talking about the Autobahn in Germany, which I find to be a manifestly irresponsible form of a transit or conduit. There's no speed limit. Yes, sir. There's no speed limit. You can go like a bat out of hell. and kill anything you want. And we don't think that that's responsible, especially for anyone traveling with a family.
Okay, I understand what you're saying there, but what about here in the United States? You're talking about lowering the speeds, but the thing about it is I'm out here on the road every day. I'm on the road right now going to Georgia. But the thing about it is, the people here need to learn to respect one another driving. It ain't about the speed, it's about the respect to the driver.
Well, yes. But I think if you say, well, we need to learn respect, and oh, yeah, at the same time, let's raise the speed limit, you're asking far too much of the average driver. Now, you, William, you're a truck driver, so you're an above-average driver. Most drivers on the freeways and highways of America, the expressways and the whatnot, are not as, I don't know what to say, they're not as bright.
No,
you're saying
everybody.
Well, I want to ask. Yeah, I want to ask. I want to ask Lloyd. You're saying that the average driver in America is dumb.
Who's that?
Not necessarily. I felt like the man last hour said everybody's so stupid they can't be a hero. I don't want to say that. But I think. Who's the guy that's talking that keeps talking?
This is the truck driver who you won't let it talk. Go ahead, William.
I just hear in the background a very faint rural accent. Is that you, William?
No, it ain't me. This is me. It's one of the
okay, go ahead.
I'm out here
go ahead, William.
All the time. I'm out here on the interstate all the time.
Yes,
and
sir.
I deal with all kind of drivers out here, especially in four-wheelers. And the four-wheelers, they got to be first. They cut trucks off and stuff like that, and it makes it hard on the truck driver. But I'm going to say this right now. You're talking about the Autobahn and stuff, about the speed on the interstate.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to tell you this. The interstates were built for commercial truck drivers and military use only. So why is the four-wheelers out here?
Well, why'd you say a four-wheeler? What's that?
That's the truck
car.
Driver's term for a car, a regular car.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, I don't know the answer to that, William. I would double-check with your source material on whether the interstates were built specifically for the military transit and the truck. I would say this. I'd be in favor of returning them to only trucks and military vehicles because, as far as I'm concerned, I lost my place. I'm sorry.
Well, what's okay. That general about that last night? That general, man, he was way
that,
off.
That General Shaw last night was out of his mind. He wanted to change everything.
What did he want to do?
He wanted to pull truckers off the road 30 days out of the year and a bunch of other stuff that I can't remember, but it was pretty far-reaching and really ridiculous. And it was all based upon his own experience as a truck driver where he couldn't deal with anything.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about, I'm not a lunatic, if that's what you're asking. I'm trying to save lives.
I understand that, sir. All right, thanks very much, William, for your call. 877-876-7445 is our number. Let's go to the other William that we have on the line here. William, you're on the air with Lloyd Bonafide. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just calling in to comment about some of the different speed limits and stuff. They're fine where they're at. However, the enforcement can be a whole lot better. So it's not necessarily I live down in Louisiana right now, and just my industry, I go from house to house. I'm off every interstate within southeast Louisiana, and I actually grew up in the middle part of California, and my grandparents' property was a mile off of rural I-5. So the gas station I worked at as a little kid was on I-5 where the speed limit was 70. And it's not so much that the speed limit's too high, it's that in everywhere that I've ever been, if the speed limit's posted at 60, everybody's doing 70. If the speed limit's posted at 70, everybody's doing 85. The higher the speed limit, the more grace that it seems to be allowed by Highway Patrol. I mean, I remember I-5, you'd have officers passing me. I'd be doing 80, and officers with no lights on or anything would blow past me, you know, and Corvettes and other cars.
I understand that, but more to the point, the average driver... It just like a little kid, if you're not standing over them all the time, they're going to take their pants off and walk around with no pants on. That's what the average driver does. If you aren't standing over them with a switch ready to beat them, they're going to go too fast. And so that's why I say no, 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 no. Don't raise the speed limit, and I don't want to hear any more talk about the Autobahn and what the Germans get to do. Let them kill themselves over there. I don't care.
But the discussion about the Autobahn, Lloyd, is
it's
that
the Autobahn though, I mean, is I just, I'm going to just be straightforward and honest with you.
Yes, sir.
I mean, you keep saying you don't care about it, but it's every other word that's coming out of your mouth. I've never been to the Autobahn. I said nothing about it whatsoever. But yet, there you go, jump into how you don't want to talk about it again. But this, the fact of the matter is that through proper enforcement, I think that the speed limits are good. If there's any sort of additional thing before you lower the speed limit, because going through a lot of the rural places, and I mean, I've been through some of that 80-mile-an-hour zone in Montana, there is nothing around there. So before you necessarily would lower the speed limit, you might as well build a little pull-off where, say, every 2 hours, basically, the people that are crossing the country are pretty much forced to pull off, go through a little part of the city where, you know, that's going to be their restroom break. They get their focus back. I think that you'd have a lot more success in that, because going through those rural areas, even if you brought it down to 55, you have people trying to drive 6-8 hours straight, unregulated. Now, truck drivers are pretty much
going
to
stop. But you see, but here's what's going on then. If you let people go 80, then they're going to start thinking that, oh, I'm on the Autobahn. They're going to think they're some kind of race car driver.
But if they're...
Okay, all right, look, right. William, got to take a break. Thank you, sir. Very good call. 877-876-7445. 877-876-7445. So, no 80-mile-an-hour limits... because people are just taking advantage.
Yeah, you 80-mile-an-hour limit, the average American driver is going to think, look at me, we're just as good as the Autobahn people are. And I will have none of it.
All right, we'll be right back with Lloyd Bonafide, The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
I'll have none of it.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
They're what they said.
I understand that, sir. I will address that with my backstage past listeners right now. I apologize. The last few days, we've had segments where the audio has not been switched back on for our video feed. I apologize for that. As you know, our audio is switched off at times during our commercial breaks for business purposes, phone screening and other reasons, and it does not get switched back on. It's entirely my fault. I do apologize to those of you watching the video cast. We are endeavoring to correct that problem as we speak.
Yeah, but if I could say, Mr. Henry.
Go ahead.
This guy that my daughter married has said to me that it's a frequent problem. Now, I don't like the guy any more than, you know, any more than I... Then I'd like a stranger. That's how what I think of him, but he's always talking about it.
Okay, so he's a subscriber to my website, your son-in-law?
The man that my daughter married, yes, is a subscriber to your website. And
I take it you don't like to call him your son-in-law.
What's that?
You don't like to call him your son-in-law?
No, I don't call the man that my daughter married is a subscriber to your website, and he said that the last few days there are segments of your video that he can't hear because you've turned the audio off because you're swearing like a stevedore, cursing and swearing like a dock worker. That's what he said, the man that my daughter...
Well, that's not the reason. The reason is that we're going through phone screening. There's personal and business conversations taking place that I don't want anybody to hear. It's unfortunate that I take this on myself, that I forget to turn this back on.
And he also said, if I could continue...
I'd like to get back to what we're talking about.
All right, forget it then.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to what we're talking about. We are on here with Lloyd Bonafide. And you're very kind to be with us here, Mr. Bonafide. This is part of our listener newsmaker segment, where listeners will come on the air and take on an issue that's been important to them. And for you, Mr. Bonafide, the issue of the speed limit, the speed limits in this country have been very important to you because of the death of a very dear friend of yours some 10 years ago on an interstate on a head-on collision. So I certainly understand that. We had one caller say that, well, you're talking an awful lot about the Audubon. And
No, I don't want to talk about the Audubon. I don't want to hear another word about the Audubon. Now, he brought it up, and he said, for a guy that doesn't want to talk about the Audubon, you're sure you're talking a lot about it. Now, you know, I only talked about the Audubon because of everybody wants to pretend like they're on the Audubon. That's why you have the 80-mile-an-hour speed limits in the state of Montana, where the speed limit is such that people like to pretend they're in the Alps, and they're going fast, and they're in a Porsche, and they've got a girlfriend with them, and they're on their way to Munich or Berlin. Well, I'm here to tell you that if you get on the 80-mile-an-hour interstate in Montana, you're as far away from Berlin as you're ever going to be. And there's no big city within screaming distance. If you are attacked by the alien and the extra, well, I don't want to get bizarre, but the extra, you know what I mean, right?
And well, yeah, but you are getting bizarre. If I'm attacked by the alien, what?
No one's going to hear the scream.
Okay, in other words, you're in the middle of Montana.
You're in the middle of Montana going like a bat, going bat crap, like a bat out of hell, and you are fantasizing that you are on the Autobahn.
Okay. Who's doing this fantasizing? All I'm trying to figure out here.
The average motorist is fantasizing it.
Well, all I'm trying to figure out here, sir, is you want the speed limit lowered. We are not Europe, right?
No, we're not. There you go, bringing up the Audubon again.
Sir, just as the one caller indicated, you had brought up the Audubon. You were talking about the Audubon.
I'm talking about the Audubon only to tell people to quit fantasizing that America is ever going to be at a level where we get to be like we have an Autobahn, driving very fast in our Porsche with our girlfriend going to Berlin. We're not going to Berlin. There is no Berlin if you're on the interstate in Montana. God, I'm losing my voice.
Well, then quit yelling, sir.
Well, Mr. Henry, I'm trying to get people...
Quit yelling, sir. By the way, this Erin Burnett is really starting to piss me off with her effects of combat, death, and war, signs of stress, PTSD, this, that. She's really starting to piss me off. And she's got these pictures.
Who's that?
Erin Burnett.
I think she's... Oh, boy, I need that. I could use some of that. But the But the Interstate 80 or the interstate that goes through Montana... Montana's the key. Montana. All right? Montana.
Yeah, all right. 877-876-7445. Lloyd Bonafide talking with us here about lowering the speed limits here in the United States. Harvey Wireman joins us, who is an attorney at law in San Marino, California. Harvey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very good, pal, and I good evening to your caller. And
what'd you say?
I said good evening to you, sir. My name is Mr. Wireman. I am not quite sure what this man's referring to, but I would say that the American motorist has a right to demand any road condition that they feel would be safer, as well as more usable, and for the...
Why don't you spit it out and get to it, huh?
You talking to me, pal?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
All right, well, I'm spitting it out and I'm getting to it. I've heard you on here before. You Navy?
Yeah, I'm Navy. What's that supposed to mean?
Never mind.
No, hold the phone. What is that supposed to mean?
Can we get on with this and not talk about where everybody went to the service?
Went to the service? What do you think it's like where I went to school? You're Navy, though, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. And I don't stutter either, so what's the story?
Okay, guys, I'm going to hang up.
All right, well, let me just say this, because I don't want to spend more time with this guy than I have to. the American people have every right in the world to ask for a highway system wherein they are allowed to drive as fast as they want. If that means the Autobahn in Germany as a model, then that's what it means. You can't talk to the American motorist like he's some kind of a child and say that he has no right to fantasize about being on the Autobahn with a girl in a short skirt and a pair of panties going to Paris. I didn't say Paris. I said Berlin. All right. You talked about Berlin. Talked about going to Paris. And I don't want to talk about going to Paris.
Okay, what is the point here?
What's the point of what?
What are you trying to say?
I'm saying, if I want to get on the Autobahn and I want to go like a bat clean out of hell, then that's what I'm going to do. And this guy and his little self-appointed citizens group is not going to tell me I can't.
Look at buddy, you can, as far as I'm concerned, you can kill yourself 50 different ways if you want to. But in the United States of America, the speed limit comes down. If you want to go to Europe and you want to get out on the Autobahn, and you want to drive like you're on a Bonobon?
And it is the Bonobon.
I mean, if you want to go on the Autobahn and drive like you're on the Autobahn.
Yes, that's what I would do.
If you were on the Autobahn?
Yes.
All right.
What an idiot.
Well, no, both of you guys are stupid.
What makes me stupid?
If I go on the Autobahn, I want to drive like I'm on the Autobahn.
Well, I didn't. He said that. And
that's what I'm saying.
Do you want to have an Autobahn in the United States?
Yes, I would like to have that.
Well, now see, right there, right, stand right there. Just stand, don't move. Right there, you're an idiot.
All right, 877-876-7445 here on the Phil Hendry Show. Question for you, Lloyd. Do you see a time when the American motorist will be able to responsibly handle the speeds that people now responsibly handle in Europe?
There you go again, talking about the Autobahn.
The Autobahn. Autobahn.
I know what it's called, but the repetition of it has softened. It literally softens that area of the brain that you need to say the Autobahn. The Autobahn.
I can't deal with it. Put him on hold. Get him organized, you know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, hey, just Harvey, look, you better pull your act out and get your head out of your butt.
Let me just calm down and let me get into the break before you're blathering on the air. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, as we continue here talking about the Autobahn or the Autobahn or the 80 miles an hour on your way to Paris or Berlin. Or wherever, like a bat out of hell. Phil Hendry Show, be right
Truth
back.
Truth is our bitch. The I Phil Hendry that. Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-7445. Just a quick note on the issue that we had with the audio on our video cast. I have a note here from the esteemed Johnny Bean in the Bay Area who says that Skype is the way to go. Bud, are you going to look into that for me, or do you want me to find some? Do you want me to talk to Robert about that?
Now, the Skype, I can figure out what it is and find out all about it.
All right, because I think that might be.
If you're talking about Skype, I know about Skype, Mr. Hendry, because I was in touch with some of the Iranian protesters and Green Wave during the Green Revolution. I was in touch with a great many members of the underground via Skype.
And how was it?
I can tell you that it was a wonderful idea. I think Skype is the way to go. I'd be very careful as to who you're talking to on Skype, but if you feel that can solve the problems that you're having with the audio, I would go with Skype. As I say, I was in touch with Green Wave revolutionaries. Again,
Greenway.
I get that, but I don't need to talk to revolutionaries inside of Iran. I just need to be in touch with the esteemed Mr. Bean and other people who may help us with this audio situation. 877-876-PHIL is our number. On the line with me is Lloyd Bonafide as we continue to talk about the speed limits here in the United States and the lowering of them. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Lloyd Bonafide. Go ahead, sir. Wow, I can't even hear that caller. Turn that level up on these callers, please. You there?
I'm here.
No, but you know what, sir? We got a phone system that's so cheap, it's almost criminal. Go ahead. No
okay.
kidding. I mean, the phone system we got must be the worst in history because I get half of the callers I got on the line here. I cannot hear you guys at all. Now I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, I am here. And I just wanted to say that...
I can hear the man fine, Mr. Henry.
Okay.
Okay, the Lloyd, he sounds to me like he's kind of an... He's a fool with an agenda, but he's not even prepared. And I find it disgraceful the way that he, one, wants to cram lowering the speed limits. Speed does not kill. You watch people who know how to drive, racing, and even professionals on the road. We don't get into incidents like that because we know how to drive. And
let me ask you a question. You just called me a fool, and yet you don't even sound like you are used to public speaking because you sound like you're sputtering and like that.
Sir, all right, what are we going to do here? Are we going to start making fun of each other?
Well, this guy called me a fool. I'm going to say he sounds as if he stepped in a puddle and held onto a high tension line at one point in his life. And you know what I mean by that, don't you?
I have been. Well. Electrocuted by 483 phase, okay?
That's what I figured, because you sound like you have the messages are not...
All right, Mr. Bonafide, please let the gentleman talk and quit butting in.
That guy called me a fool, friend.
Okay, fine. He called you a fool. We're past that.
Well, maybe I'll rephrase it. You certainly sound like a fool, but leave that alone for now, please. I'm going to go on to the part that... I'm very disgraced.
Did you really pick up a high tension line standing in water?
Oh, will you hold and let the man finish?
Thank you. The way that you talk about your son-in-law, and you refer to him as the man my daughter married, very disrespectful
right.
to your daughter, but yet you can bring up the Audubon, which you keep doing. You never refer to it as that road. Like you refer to your son-in-law.
What?
That's disgraceful.
You
need to learn how to get along with people. No way. If you can't see it, then you're very dim.
That road, look, the man that my daughter married is very specific to my daughter. That road could be any road anywhere.
She's your daughter. That's
right. Think of it that way,
didn't you? We already know what that road is because that's all you keep bringing up. Besides your
No, I haven't.
About
I wish people would stop bringing up the
Audubon. And the gentleman's right, that's all you bring up.
Why are you against the Audubon?
I'm not against it. You're the one that's against it, just like you're against your son-in-law. You don't use his name, you don't refer to him as your son-in-law. So why do you, if you're genuinely against having an Audubon here and you're tired of hearing about it, why do you bring it up? You're the one that brings it up by name. You ask
my son-in-law. My son-in-law has got to be the dumbest guy I've ever met. Dumb? Oh, baby,
I don't think so. I know
he could have had half of my he could have had half of my business, but instead he joins the army because he wants to be a hero.
So what is wrong with that?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it, my friend. He's got a wife and a son to support. That's what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
He could have had half of my business, and instead he's taking home that dog face pay for nothing.
Your grandson someday will learn respect and honor from his father because his father has learned to...
He already knows. He's got a grandfather that's a Korean War veteran. I tell my grandson all Wonderful. About how we used to take those Chinese out. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's just fine. Well, that's wonderful.
Really not the right way. That's not the right way you should address it either.
Oh, come on. I talked to my grandson. I said the bull haircuts that I've seen would make your skin crawl.
The bull haircut. So this is how you teach your son to be tolerant of human beings?
Wait a second. What are you two guys trying to pull anyway? Are you trying to make this about me?
I'm a veteran, I find you disgraceful to the military.
Let me ask you something. Were you electrocuted by the Vietnamese? What are you doing standing in a puddle of water? Why did you throw that fan into the bathtub?
All right. Bruce, very good.
Yes,
thank you for your call. You're a good man, and I appreciate very much your phone call this evening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Is he gone?
Yes, he's gone.
What did I tell you, huh? Boy, I got a nose for it. I knew that guy had stepped into a big, deep puddle of water and said, oh, look, a down power line. I knew it.
You think that's what he said, huh?
Well, I don't know if that's exactly how, but I knew that somewhere along the line, because the way, see what he did there? See that? He goes, he had the, I don't know how to say it, but he had the halting speech, you know, of a man who'd ridden the lightning. And,
I can't take any more of that, okay?
That guy's the newsmaker.
I don't give a damn if he's the newsmaker. Next time we pick out a newsmaker, pick one better, okay?
Now, that's the only newsmaker we have. The guy want to talk about lowering the speed limit.
I don't care. If that's the only guy that we got, we're doing pretty bad around here. Next time I want somebody who's a listener who wants to talk about an issue, get me somebody that's got both oars in the water, if you don't mind.
What were you thinking? That guy's crazy?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. That guy's talking about that poor man who called in and been electrocuted. Boy, I knew it. The minute I heard him, I knew I'd got a guy that rode the lightning. Unbelievable, man. And that thing about the Autobahn and the Autobahn, and he don't know what he's saying. Well, my feeling on all of this, and I'm glad that I hung up on that guy because it'll give me an opportunity to finally say what it is I wanted to say about it.
And another thing about the Autobahn...
Will you hang up on the guy? I hope the speed limit goes higher and higher and higher and higher until every road in America is the Autobahn. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Autobahn! The right thing.
Phil Henry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendricks.
This is a Tommy Bahama shirt.
Yeah, people think Tommy Bahama's gay.
Well, I'll let them think that. Welcome back to the show, Phil Henry Show. What do you think of it, Robert?
I look pretty good, sir.
I'm just saying, I heard that Tommy Bahama ain't no chick magnet. That is for sure.
I don't give a sweet geez if it is or if it isn't, okay? I happen to like this shirt. I don't even know if it is a Tommy Bahama, but if it is a Tommy Bahama, I happen to like it. It ain't no chick magnet. I don't care, man. I'm working here, okay? We're working here. Just like Ratso Rizzo, he's walking here. I'm working here. 877-876-PHIL. It is our news and information hour. And we're going to get Skype in here. Yes, indeed. Skype is what we need so that we can have clear communication to a number of contacts out in the free world. People who can alert me to the... to the audio feed problems that we may have. People are going to alert me to the problems with fashion, my Tommy Bahama. Whatever the hell the problem is, people will be able to alert us. We'll get Skype up in here, as they say. 877-876-7445. What's the problem, bud?
I just think that tonight on a show when Mr. Hall called up saying to get off the whole topic about, you know, the guy, what the guy was talking about, in the first hour?
Yeah, what were we talking about in the first hour? Who was that guest we had?
That was, the last hour, I know we had Lloyd Bonifide in the first hour on the Lloyd Bonifide. Oh, yeah, that was our Bob Bell winner.
Oh, yeah, the whole hero thing. Yeah, that was pretty bizarre. You know, one of the things about that story in Texas is that it's one of those fast-breaking stories. I don't know that on our show we should be dealing with those fast-breaking stories. We need to deal with stories where people have an absolute concrete opinion about something or they have experience with it, you know. But the story there in Texas was a little bizarre. And quite frankly, some writer who says he doesn't like to call people heroes unless they're cops or soldiers, I don't know what to make of that. All I do know is that, you know, he got a few people upset with him, especially Hall, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Mr. Hall got upset and everything. I think you got to be very careful about that.
I don't give a... Let me explain something to you, Bud, for the last time. Whether he gets upset or not, I don't care. I'm not going to let that dictate how this radio show goes. I can tell you right now, I'm my own man. See this? See this guy here? I don't do anything that anybody tells me to do. I do it only if it is for the better of the show. I have integrity. Thank you very much. What?
Mr. Hall.
Say, how about that anyway? So you want to wash the car and then get it over to my house? Wash. Are we on the air?
Yeah, yeah. You know, David, if we could talk about this after the show.
No, I just want to make sure you wash the car, you get it back over to my house. And then, of course, you can use it this weekend. And, those other things I asked you to do.
Yeah, fine.
All right, I'm sorry I called in the middle of the show.
What are you talking about, man? You're going to wash his car? What are you doing?
Yeah, you're on your knees to the man.
No, I'm not. There's just some things we discussed. All right.
No, man, you're telling me like you're on your knees to the man, like you said.
Yeah, you're on your knees to the man.
Will you shut up? I'm not on my knees to the man. I'm just walking on my ankles. All right, so...
yeah, I knew it.
Just take it easy. HBO cancels Luck. HBO has canceled the TV show Luck after the third thoroughbred has died. This is a television show about horse racing, and this is the third animal to have died during production of this HBO miniseries, a miniseries that has celebrated horse racing. Now, I was born and raised in Arcadia, California. All you have to do is go to a map, or you can look on Winklepedia or whatever you use to see that Arcadia is the home of Santa Anita Racetrack. So my whole life, from the time I was very small up until adulthood, at least part of the year, my life was about horse racing. Whether I was at the track, whether I wasn't at the track, didn't matter, because our little town would get invaded by these cars. I mean, every winter from December the 25th through April, suddenly there would be this just rush of traffic coming into Arcadia from Los Angeles and elsewhere. I mean, just an enormous amount of traffic. Used to get tens of thousands of people out at Santa Anita. And this was, you know, can you imagine this now? Just think about this for a second. We had a grade school right across the street from Santa Anita Racetrack. We have down the street from my grade school was another elementary school called Holly Avenue School in Arcadia. All right. In the city of Arcadia, there were also several other little grade schools. First Avenue School was one. And up in Sierra Madre, there was St. Rita's. So you've got all of these little kids on bicycles, on foot, and some of them in buses. But in those days, not everybody rode the bus. And a lot of kids rode their bikes. And at the same time, you've got all these cars that are streaming out of the parking lot at Santa Anita. This was my life for 8 solid years in grammar school, and then again for 4 years in high school, for a total of 12 years. When I grew up there, every year, every single solitary year from December to April, suddenly this enormous influx of traffic, tons and tons of cars. Meanwhile, you got kids walking home from school, riding bikes. I don't remember. I'm sure it happened, but it didn't happen to the extent that there was any panic. But I will tell you now, I don't remember any specific incidents of a kid getting hit by a car, run over by a car, kids getting killed, anything like that happening in that period of time. The Arcadia cops had control of each traffic light in the city. They had a cop standing at every traffic light in the city, controlling the flow of the traffic in and out of that racetrack.
How'd they do it?
Well, I think the key was this. Years later, I got to talking to some guys that worked on the Arcadia Police Force in those days. They said, we got all those cars out of there in 45 minutes. 45 minutes, they were gone. I think he might have said 45 to an hour.
Yeah, if you get about 45 to an hour, then there are no little kids out there.
Right. Well, if they get the cars out of there and off the street, boom, that's it. And the kids are safe. But, you know, you don't have traffic leaving all at once. When the final horse racing has whatever it is, 7 or 8 races on the program for a day, on the card for the day, and people are coming and going watching these races. But most people come for the first race and stay all the way to the end. And after the end of the last race of the day, bang, everybody's in their car and they're out of there. And I think that took place, let's say, 5:30 at night. So probably the fact that school ended around 3:30 was another factor in weighing in the favor of safety. But I got to tell you, it's crazy. The only reason why it even was tolerated is because the track was there longer than a lot of the schools. The Arcadia, the Holy Angel school that I went to, the grade school I went to, was newer than the Santa Anita racetrack. Santa Anita was built in 1932. And many of the schools that we had in Arcadia were built later. So the track predated everybody, and everybody sort of had to work around the racetrack. In any event, the horse racing series Luck has been canceled by HBO after a third thoroughbred died during production of the series starring Dustin Hoffman and Nick Nolte. The drama about the seedier side of horse racing will air the final 2 episodes of its first season now in progress. The series won't return for the second season that began production last month. While we maintain the highest safety standards possible, accidents unfortunately happen, and it is impossible to guarantee that they won't in the future. Accordingly, we've reached this difficult decision. The move was made with David Milch, the show's creator, and Michael Mann, his fellow executive producer on the drama that brought the film actor Hoffman to the series. It was a high-profile project for the premium channel that stakes its reputation on such fare. HBO said it was immensely proud of the series and those involved in it, and the producers said in a joint statement that they loved this series, they loved the cast, they loved the crew, and they loved the writers. A horse was injured and euthanized at Santa Anita Racetrack, and HBO agreed to suspend filming with the animals after the Humane Group that oversees Hollywood Productions had issued an immediate demand that all production involving horses shut down pending an investigation. The horse was euthanized at the track in suburban Arcadia. During season 1 filming in 2010 and 2011, 2 horses were hurt during racing scenes and euthanized. HBO defended its treatment of the animals, saying it has worked with the American Humane Society and racing industry experts to implement safety protocols. The American Humane Association's film and TV unit, the group sanctioned and supported by the entertainment industry to protect animals used in filming, called for a production halt at Santa Anita after the second horse's death. Racing resumed after new protocols were put in place and proved effective. I guess they're racing horses?
Yeah, they're racing horses on a TV show.
Oh, not actual racing of horses.
No, man, they're like fake race.
Well, TV races, okay. On Tuesday, Gary Beck, a California Horse Racing Board veterinarian, said he had examined the horse as part of routine health and safety procedures before it was to race. Later in the day, the horse passed the inspection. The horse was on her way back to the stall when she reared, flipped over backward, and struck her head on the ground. An attending veterinarian determined that euthanasia was appropriate. You get 3 horses dying, and horse racing doesn't even have that kind of a track record, if you'll pardon the expression. I mean, I don't, I could be wrong. I haven't heard of horse racing losing 3 thoroughbreds at the same track in 3 years. All right, so that's the end of that. The seedier side of racing, huh? Well, I was hopeful that they would be also showing the better side of racing, because horse racing is a reputable and beautiful sport. And, you know, they could use all the help they can get these days. But unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe, Luck, you're out of luck, baby.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're out of luck.
Yeah, you're all out of luck now.
Yeah, you're out of luck. Okay, we'll keep beating that into the ground during the commercial break so you don't have to hear that. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, back with more in our news and information hour here on The Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com. Phil TV and HD, take a look at our live streaming video cast tonight.
Woo!
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show.
If you're looking at Phil TV in HD, I have there on the screen a New York Times. Is that the New York Times? It is the Chicago Tribune, excuse me, reporting on a Goldman Sachs executive by the name of Greg Smith, who wrote a op-ed that appeared in the New York Times outlining a number of complaints about Goldman. Most notably, the bank had, quote, lost its way, shirking the needs of its customers out of greed. And this has created quite a stir, and I think with good reason, and it should be something that should be welcome, you know.
That's on account of a lot of stuff you say, Mr. Henry.
All right, well, don't go, you know.
Don't go kissing his ass, man.
I ain't kissing his ass. Not a lot of things you say, though.
Well, thank you, bud.
Oh, brother.
Take it easy.
Yeah, you just wish you thought of it.
I didn't wish I thought of it, man. Just quit laying it on so thick.
All right, take it easy. Look. I mean, it's something we all talk about here on the show, and that is, has America decided that money is so important that it doesn't really matter how you make it? Now, money is important. I'm not going to... Why would I pretend that money isn't important? Of course it's important. Do you want it? Yes, you do want it. Do I want it? You better believe I want it. Does money buy you happiness? No, but it buys you the freedom, a great deal of freedom, to begin your search for happiness. Yes, indeed. That's what I believe. But the way you make your money in life, you know what? You got to look in the mirror at the end of your days. And if you feel good about your life, what can I tell you? I will say this, though. If we continue to, in our country, ignore what was at one time a very, you know, it was a very prime directive, if you will.
Yeah, like Star Trek.
Just like Star Trek. What do you mean, Star Trek?
No, like that. They got that non-interference directive.
It ain't a non-interference directive. I'm saying that this is a very, very prime a bit of morality to say, I want to do my very best for my customers. I want to give them a product that is a quality product that we can be proud of, that they will come back to us again and again to buy, that we're not going to sit at the end of the day and say, boy, we really conned a lot of people into that, didn't we? Boy, we really got a lot of fish on the line for that one. I mean, I'd rather not live my life like that. I don't know about anybody else. Some people, they don't care. And it could very well be that all of those psychopaths and sociopaths that we love to talk about so enjoyably, in the words of, to paraphrase, General Ripper, it could be that those psychopaths and those sociopaths are more numerous in the business world than we first would be willing to believe. That they don't care about you, me, themselves. In fact, they just like the game of amassing as much wealth as they can. It doesn't matter how they do it. Goldman Sachs executive Greg Smith unleashed a storm, penning a stinging commentary against his soon-to-be former employer, one of the world's largest investment banks. In his missive, which appeared in the New York Times, he outlined a number of complaints about Goldman, most notably that the bank had lost its way, shirking the needs of its customers out of greed. In the following edited transcript, workplace experts discussed their reactions to the piece. Why do these public displays of anger toward an employer grab our attention? It confirms everybody's worst fear about what's going on inside the company. We see ourselves in Mr. Smith's response. It's the one I'd like to write, but I can't. There was a study done about a decade ago suggesting that roughly 55% of employees see their organization as violating its obligation to its customers and its employees. We start shaking our heads and saying, yeah, that's what I'm feeling, so it resonates with us. That was a comment made by Robert Rubin, who's the associate professor of management at DePaul University. It happens in my business, in the broadcasting business. I always let you guys in on my innermost feelings about that. It's happening in my business. You know, what are we in business for? Somebody messaged me on email today, who's a colleague in the business, and he said, what's happening to our business? He said this to me. We are two broadcasters. He said, what's happening to our business? And I sort of regret the response I gave him, but not 100% regret it, because I think it was the only response that I could give him. And it was the only response that I thought to give him at the time. He said, what the hell is happening to our business? I basically responded to him and said, our business, it's not my business. Because that's how I survive.
You don't think you're in the radio business?
That's how I survive. I just divorced myself from a business that is hell-bent on ignoring quality broadcasting, giving the audience the most quality product possible. This industry is hell-bent on that, and it has decided that it's going to go the cheap route. It's going to return to its days as a jukebox. It's not going to expand the entertainment platform at all. It's going to alienate its talent. It's going to steal from its talent. It's, you know, and I don't give a damn if people think that I bang the drum too much about this stuff. It doesn't make any difference to me. I could care less. Because, like I said, I ain't in that business anymore. I don't go to any more industry functions. I ain't going to any more NABs. I'm not going to any more new media seminars. I'm not going to any more Talkers Magazine. I'm not going to any of that stuff, man, because it's a waste of time. And frankly, nobody talks about radio anyway. They all sit there and posture. It's if you want to know what's wrong with this business, go to a freaking radio seminar. When an employee publicly condemns his or her former employer, can it be a teaching moment? Says Ginny Clark. I would like to believe so. It's a risky form of activism. Smith could be blackballed. He must intend to never go back to the industry. He was constructive in his parting comments. There's a protocol and there's accountability in his comments that the board of directors should have to pay attention to. I've been a corporate director. If I were on Goldman's board, I would take an interest and make an inquiry. There's a true business liability associated with the culture that he describes. Well, what did this man, Mr. Smith, say? Essentially, what he said was that, as these people are indicating, that Goldman Sachs had stopped caring about its clients and was only interested in making a dollar no matter how they were making that dollar. So, I mean, that's the germane part. That's the core. That's the kernel, if you will, of truth that was contained in this man's statements. And that's what's happening in the country, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody talking about everyone making money, but nobody cares how. How do you turn it around?
It ain't going to get turned around. It's not going to get turned around. Here's how it gets turned around. It's going to get turned around when the consumers, who are the people that are listening to me right now, okay?
Yeah, but you're not talking to him. You're talking to me.
Yeah, I'm talking to you, right, but they're overhearing me. When the consumers, who are the people listening to the radio right now, when those people finally get so sick and tired of being lied to, when they get so sick and tired of being manipulated by these fools that pretend like they've got some political interest and patriotic interest in the country, and so they have their little talk show and they wave the flag and they use all of these marvelous images of America, when in point of fact, all they give a damn about, man, is holding on to their freaking job. They go from one gig to the next being a liberal or a conservative. It doesn't make any difference. These guys are pretending like, for instance, talk radio means something. The only thing it means to me, well, the only thing it means to me is I try to squeeze a little bit of fun out of this thing every night. You know, that's it. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah, Goldman said, never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Why do you get me talking about this?
That'd be pretty interesting up to, well, when you start talking about it, it's not big.
Yeah, sure.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, News and Information Hour. I got another story here on this Goldman Sachs guy, this Greg Smith, who is called a Judas in Market Watch by a writer named John Friedman. Goldman Sachs Judas blazes media path. Smith's op-ed drew about 3 million page views online. Get a load of this. See, this is a one of those watershed moments in American business that you and I rarely pay attention to because it's up there on Wall Street and we think that that's something we don't understand. That's not the case, folks. We do understand it. We do understand. We live in the world that he lives in. It's a different business, of course, But what this man is trying to say is essentially the things that you and I think about when we go about our day's work. We sit there saying, I'd like to make a lot of money, but I know how to do my job, too. No one would say to you and hope to get away without losing a few teeth, you sure do make a lot of money for a guy that is bad at what he does. Well, that's what's going on in America. That's what people, the guys that are making the money, are bad at what they do. Let's just spell it out. Do I need to prove this to you? You take a look at the economy. Take a look at where we are. Take a look at the, sure, money's coming back in, but everybody is, quote, entrepreneurial now. You can't work for these big companies because they don't know what they're doing. They can't afford, first of all, to pay you any longer. The big companies can't afford to pay you because the guys at the top, number one, they don't want to lose their job, and they sure as hell don't want to bring on people that are smarter than them. I'm not making this up. This is the fact. I see it happening all the time in my own industry. I told you yesterday, there's guys at the top of the heap in the radio business who should be in jail, let alone not have a job. They ought to be in jail. They can't afford to pay any longer, so it becomes, in my business, it's a revenue-sharing thing. They got to go out then and actually do some real work, which is to go out and sell some advertising. Meanwhile, these guys they're no good at that. So the air talent, guys like me and others, we find other ways to make a living. I'm lucky. I'm one of the luckiest guys on earth. People pay a subscription price to listen to my radio show. They pay a subscription price to listen to the archives of this show. Not everybody can do that. Not everyone that can demand that people subscribe to their audio. Now, as we get on to this story here about Greg Smith, talk about creating a buzz. Smith took the extraordinary step of writing a highly unflattering op-ed piece on Wednesday for the New York Times. By doing so, he broke ranks with a world in which the big money crowd of Wall Street happily pockets its bonuses and doesn't tend to rock the boat in public. A Goldman Sachs spokeswoman subsequently told the Times, "We disagree with the views expressed, which we don't think reflect the way we run our business. But the damage to the firm's image has been done." You think Goldman Sachs had a good image anyway? I don't know where you guys... Here's one area where I can teach you guys at Goldman Sachs something. Seriously. I know you guys are brilliant, and I know you know what you're doing, and whatever the hell it is you do, I guess you do it well. And maybe all those people on Wall Street still consider you to be just the gold standard. The average man out here on the street, the average person on the street, when we hear the name Goldman Sachs, we think a crook. That's what we do. Because all we know is what happened in 08. And that's good enough for us. Is that fair or unfair? Well, it's turning out now, at least in the opinion of one of your former employees, maybe we haven't got such a jaded point of view. Maybe we're dead on. Smith, a Wall Street star, has introduced another chapter to his legacy. Eventually, he may add another credit. He could be regarded as a media trailblazer in the rarefied world of disgruntled millionaires everywhere. Disgruntled millionaires? Wall Street traders come and go all the time, but few have quit with the flair of a Greg Smith, the Times noted in a news story about the op-ed piece. In the op-ed heard round the world, Smith blasted Goldman's corporate culture and its attitudes towards clients. Here's a phrase that I heard early on in my syndication career. When I was in local radio, you didn't hear it at all because I worked for local radio stations. And corporate culture, when you're working for a local station, even if you're working for a local station in a market the size of Los Angeles or New York, it's still a fairly small environment. But when you are in the world of syndicated radio, and I mean where there's lots of offices and lots of suits and lots of people, suddenly there's a thing called corporate culture. And corporate culture, folks, and I got at least one guy here that agrees with me, Greg Smith, corporate culture ain't got nothing to do with creative thinking. It's got nothing to do with that. It can't, Because if you are creatively thinking, that means you're sort of going, you're looking for new and different ways to do things, and nobody in the corporate culture's got time for that, man. They want answers right now on how they can raise that bottom line next quarter. Let's go. How are we going to make them, the stockholders happy now? I need an answer yesterday. I ain't got time for your sitting around and bullcrapping ideas. In the op-ed piece heard round the world, Smith resigned on Wednesday as the executive director and head of the U.S. Equity derivatives business in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa for Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. When did he resign?
Then he resigned on Wednesday, man.
That's today, man. This cat, boy, you talk about a style. This guy's got a style all his own. He quits. On the day he quits, he's got an op-ed piece in the New York Times. Beautiful. As of late Wednesday afternoon, the op-ed had about 3 million page views. Times spokeswoman Eileen Murphy told the writer of this story, Mr. Friedman, by email. That's good news for the New York Times. Murphy added, it's the most heavily trafficked story on the site. The second story in terms of traffic is the business section story about the resignation. That story is over 500,000 page views as of the same period. I would suggest everybody listening to me right now, whatever you do for a living, you go over and take a look at his editorial, because I guarantee you on some level it will reflect in some way your experience. Unless you're one of the lucky ones that's working in an environment and with a company that still has their eye on the ball. And they're like gold these days in our world. Gold! If you can find people who really care about who their customer is. In my business, it's my listener. Goldman will likely feel the brunt of Smith's outburst for years, for years to come, underscoring how the media can help people communicate ideas to a mass public. And that's the big picture point here, that disgruntled millionaires on Wall Street, superstar athletes, political kingpins, corporate executives, movie stars, pop singers, and everyone else under the sun can take advantage of the media. Now, the guy that's writing this article has a decidedly negative view of what Greg Smith did, because he's lumping him in with movie stars, pop singers, and everybody else. But I haven't heard anybody take as high-minded a view of their industry, of their business, as this gentleman has. Okay, I listen to ballplayers, all they ever talk about is how much money they ain't making. I listen to pop stars, they may talk about how the president's a warmonger, and how the world just sucks, and how this and how that. But I don't hear them talking, I never hear them talking about, I wonder how I can make my music consumer happier next year. Have you ever heard Lady Gaga say that? I wonder, what do you think about Lady Gaga? Just, how could I really do a song that's going to make people really feel great? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, it seems to me she did do an interview like that somewhere.
Yeah.
Where?
I don't know. It just sounded like something she'd say.
Yeah, I think it's something she would say. Or maybe she hasn't said it yet, but I think the time will come when she will.
So what does that mean? So I'm going to give her credit for it?
Yeah, I think to be fair.
To be fair, because you guys are fantasizing someday she's going to say it.
Yeah.
Jeez. Anyway, they all can communicate to the broad public their gripes, their protests, their complaints. This guy all of a sudden is turning what this man said into a, hey, the media is being used now by millionaires to just turn their personal gripes into, an advertisement or a movie poster. He didn't see what this guy is actually saying. He's saying to everybody, hey, you know what? There's trouble in paradise, man. This is a personal gripe? No, this is a commentary on corporate culture, on business in America. This is an important thing to say. This is not just some guy whining that he didn't get enough bonus money. Anyway.
Yeah, it started to get over my head, too.
Yeah, me too. All right, we'll be taking a break here. We'll be right back and wrap up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. The Bobby Dooley keychain is in the shop. It's a brand new, beautiful thing, just in time for losing your keys for the spring. And we've got one more item that's going to be loaded into the shop before summertime. Don't forget to vote on your favorite Ted Bell bit of all time by going to the email form at philhendryshow.com. You have to be a Backstage Pass subscriber to vote for the best Ted Bell bit of all time at philhendryshow.com. Oh, by the way, the Bob Biggerstaff podcast, Enjoy Guys, Bob and I talk on that, and you can find a link to that on our homepage. The Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Now, if you, I'll tell you this. Welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is, you know, I don't want to be too heavy here, you know.
Well, I mean, it's an important man. Go ahead. I understand it.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, just get the New York Times, you guys, and find the Greg Smith editorial. It's, why am I leaving Goldman Sachs? Forget about the fact that he works on Wall Street, all this stuff, because I'm telling you right now, you're going to identify with a lot of what this man is saying. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read one little part of this, because listen to this. He's talking about his company, Goldman Sachs. He says, how did we get here? Meaning, how did it come to this place of being a company that he's no longer proud of? He's no longer, he has no trust in this company. He has no faith. And he sees just this decline in the integrity of this company that he used to really love. He says the firm changed the way it thought about leadership. Leadership used to be about ideas, setting an example, and doing the right thing. Today, if you make enough money for the firm and you're not currently an axe murderer, you will be promoted into a position of influence. Now, this is a Wall Street heavy. And listen to what he sounds exactly like you, me, or anybody when we say, man, I don't mind making money, but is it all about just making enough money? And you don't have to have any morality. You don't have to have any integrity. You don't have to have any pride in product. You don't have to have any ideas outside of how to screw somebody. Listen to what he says. What are three quick ways to becoming a leader? This is at Goldman Sachs. One, execute on the firm's axes, A-X-E-S, which is Goldman speak for persuading your clients to invest in the stocks or other products that we are trying to get rid of because they're not seen as having a lot of potential profit. Persuade your clients into investing in products or stocks that are seen as not having a lot of potential profit. That means you and me, if we were customers or bankers with Goldman Sachs. They're dumping this crap on us. B, hunt elephants. In English, get your clients, some of whom are sophisticated and some of whom aren't, to trade whatever will bring the biggest profit to Goldman. Call me old-fashioned, but I don't like selling my clients a product that's wrong for them. C, find yourself sitting in a seat where your job is to trade any illiquid, opaque product with a three-letter acronym, illiquid, meaning you can't, you know, it's not worth money. You can't just cash it in, turn it into money right now. Today, many of these leaders display a Goldman Sachs culture quotient of exactly 0%. I attend derivative sales meetings where not one single minute is spent asking questions about how we can help our clients. It's purely about how we can make the most possible money off of them. Now, I'm telling you, folks, I don't know about your business, but this guy might as well be talking about the radio business. I'm not kidding. He might as well be talking about the radio business. Now, I don't know if they have the same conversations in television and film. I don't know. I work a little bit in TV, but radio, I've been in the radio culture my whole professional adult life. And I'm going to read this to you again. I attend derivative sales meetings where not one single minute is spent asking questions about how we can help clients. It's purely about how we can make the most possible money off of them. Now, I'm not a salesman in radio. I'm what we call air talent. I'm talent, but I don't have to be. I know precisely that is the tenor of conversation that happens in my industry. How about yours? What about your business? The country is not where it is today because just one industry or two industries lost their way and decided it didn't matter how we made our money as long as we made our money. This is where it's at. This is what it is. Money is the answer. Absolutely the answer. Well, okay, as you make your money and your product turns to a light shade of turd green, is that okay? Yeah, sure, that's okay. I mean, people don't care. We're giving them what they want. It's fine. There's not much difference between the product today and the product 20 years ago. And in the process, like I said, I don't know about your business, but I know about my business. In the process, I've had people stand up in radio conventions I've been to, seminars, and they say radio is doing things the way it did things in 1985. I read an article in one of the trade journals. 1985, that's where my industry is stuck. How about you guys? Quality? No. Mr. Smith goes on to, he says, it's purely about how we can make the most possible money. If you were an alien from Mars and you sat in on one of these meetings, you would believe that a client's success or progress, and when we say client in the banking business, we mean listener in the radio business, customer in the radio business, where you would believe that a client's success or progress was not part of the thought process at all. Baby, I'm telling you, the guy's speaking the truth. Smith goes on to write, it makes me ill how callously people talk about ripping their clients off. Over the last 12 months, I've sat in, I've listened to people in my industry talking about how they've ran a game on somebody. How they're making this money and that money, and they talk somebody into this and they talk somebody into that, and it doesn't make any difference. If you go to these guys, you say, hey, here's a great way where we can make some bread on the show, and it's fun, and maybe we can use elements of the show. Nah, it's too tough. It's too difficult. Makes too much. They got to think. It gives them a headache. They got a better way of doing it. It makes me ill how callously they can rip off. Over the last 12 months, I've seen 5 different managing directors refer to their own clients as Muppets. Sometimes over internal email, even after the SEC, Fabulous Fab, Abacus, God's Work, Carl Levin, Vampire Squids, no humility. I mean, come on, integrity, it is eroding. I don't know of any illegal behavior, but will people push the envelope and pitch lucrative and complicated products to clients, even if they're not the simplest investments or the ones most directly aligned with the client's goals? Absolutely. Every day, in fact. So what the guy is saying is this. You as a customer, or anybody's a customer, that's not where it's at. That doesn't mean anything. What is the most important thing is so that they can keep that fat dollar rolling into their own pocket, into their own accounts. You know it to be true because remember what happened during the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac crisis and the subprime loan crisis, where guys were looking just to make their commission. They were looking just to make the number on the number of people that they signed up for a loan. They weren't looking at the applications. They didn't find out whether these people were even making enough income to afford a loan. They didn't look and see whether there was a there. All they wanted to do was get these people signed up, and then they throw this stuff on down the line. They package it up and sell it on down the line, you know.
Yeah, well, that's all well and good, but what are you going to do about it? And that horse died, too.
The horse died?
They're still on that luck thing.
Forget it. All right, so I ain't going to do nothing about it, man, but I thought it was really... I'm going to read the rest of this guy's op-ed, you know, as long as I've got it out here. Don't forget, after the show... we're doing a Q&A. If you go to philhenryshow.com and you have a backstage pass, you'll see a segment on the homepage. You'll see a little part there in the news feed that tells you this is where you ask your questions for our Q&A. That'll be happening right after the show at 1 a.m. We'll probably take a little bit of a break and then start things up at 1 a.m. On our website, philhenryshow.com. We also have, as I said, our voting going on for the Ted Bell bit. That is the best Ted Bell bit ever. And we're going to compile a best of Ted Bell compilation.
That's what compile is?
Yes, that's what compile is. We will compilate whatever, man. It'll be there on the website, and we will do that by way of your votes. So make sure if you're backstage pass holder, go over and vote. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft, as well as Phil Henry. And, of course, on our website, philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass, you are entitled to all kinds of goodies, baby. Head on over there to philhenryshow.com and get your backstage pass, watch our live streaming video of the show, and access all of the great archives, as well as the daily podcast. We love you. We love you. That is, we love university here at the El Pacifico. This is your love daddy.
Phil Henry.